The project is stalling. The problem isn't the plan. It just might be you avoiding those hard decisions. You mind if I share a short story with you? I still remember the first time leading a project. I had the plan. I had the timeline. I even had executive buy-in. But every meeting felt off. People smiled, nodded, but no one spoke up unless I did say something. Deadlines slipped without anyone even raising a flag. And one day, a senior stakeholder looked at me and said, "You're great at organizing meetings." Not, "You're doing a great job leading this project." Not, "Thanks for driving the outcomes." Just, "You're good at organizing meetings." Honestly, family, if I'm being honest, that moment hit me so hard because I realized in that moment that I had the role, but not the respect. And the respect doesn't come from the title of project management. It comes from how you carry yourself when things get real. So if you're leading your first project right now, things may feel shaky. Maybe your team is not responding the way you hope. Maybe the pressure is starting to creep in. Maybe you're smiling on the outside, but low key, if we're all going to be honest, you're really panicking in the inside. But today, let's fix this. I'm going to walk you through 8 principles I wish, and I do mean I wish, I had someone give me when I first started. Point number 1, maintain composure. You need to have some thick skin. If he has a project, you will be hit with crisis, criticisms, and setbacks. See, your team and stakeholders will look to your reaction to gauge your severity on the situation. You must be calm. You must be collective and be objective in a way when the storm is all around you. See, criticism of the project is not criticism of you. Again, criticism of the project is not criticism of you. See, why is this important, family? Because panic is contagious. Your composure inspires confidence. It allows the team to focus on solutions instead of the blame. A thick skin allows you to absorb negative feedback, separate the signal from the noise, and make rational decisions under pressure. Experiment with these actionable tips. Master the pause. You see how I did that? Master the pause. When bad news hit, train yourself to pause. Take a deep breath and ask a clarifying question before you react emotionally. Number 2, voice and body language. Keep your voice and body language steady under pressure. And the last and final one, engaging in conflict. Ask yourself, what's the outcome I want right that I want out of this before even engaging in conflict? Point number 2, lead through influence, not authority. I like that. So your title as a project manager gives you formal authority, but true relationships come from earning respect and trust of your project team as well as stakeholders. So they want to actually follow you. Why is this important? People do the minimum for a boss, but they go above and beyond for the leader they trust. Influence is what allows you to get things done when you have no direct authority over the people you need something from. Experiment with these actionable tips. Demonstrate competency. Be the most organized person in the room. Know your project details. Oh, what I mean, so cold that they look at you and say, "Man, yeah, you know those real cold." See, competence breeds confidence and respect. Number 2, be a servant leader. Your primary role is to remove roadblocks from your team. Ask daily, what's getting in your way? How can I help? Then actually make a commitment and watch this, family, do it. Next one, share the credit and absorb the blame. Listen, if we're going to be honest here, I mean, if we're going to be really transparent here, you know, anytime someone says they're going to be honest, you always get a little nervous. But if I can be transparent with you, absorbing the blame sometimes is challenging, even when you didn't even do it. But you are part of that team. You are the leader of that team. So when things go well, praise them publicly. When things go wrong, take full accountability and responsibility as a leader. Point number 3, control the narrative. If you don't proactively and consistently communicate the project status, the risk, and success, other people will create their own narrative, and it will rarely be in your favor. Why is that important? The majority of the time, perception is reality. Controlling the narrative ensures stakeholders have the right information. It builds confidence in your leadership and prevents those rumors from derailing your project. Experiment with these actionable tips. Establish a communication cadence and stick to it. Predictably builds trust, whether it's a weekly email or a bi-weekly meeting. Be relentless. Point number two, communicate for different audience. Executives need a one slide summer. Let me say something to you. And I mean this because I had to learn this the hard way. And I don't want, especially my new project managers, because I know what they're going to do. They're going to create this detailed overview and go to an executive meeting and be confused. Because you're going to feel like you did the work, and you did. But for executives, they need a one-slide summary. Your team needs a detailed task-level update. Tailor your message to the audience you are articulating to. Okay, you don't like that? Tailor what you're talking about to the people you're connecting with. Ooh, I like that. Address bad news head-on. Report on risk issues with the same transparency as you do success. This shows you are in control and not hiding from reality. Point number four, listen more than you talk, only in the beginning. See, when you first begin a project or even taking over a project, your instinct might be able to assert your authority by talking. The opposite is more powerful. Your initial goal is intelligent gathering. You need to understand the history, the hidden dynamics, and the unspoken frustration and the true motivation of the team and stakeholders. Why is this important? Talking first reveals your own biases, and people will tell you what they think you want to hear. See, listening first gives you an unfiltered view of reality. It builds rapport. It shows respect, and it makes people like you more and trust you later. Experiment with these actionable tips. Conduct what we like to call listening tours. What is a listening tour? See, this is one-on-one with every team member and stakeholder. Number two, use open-ended questions. You know, like, what's the one thing you'll change about this project? Or what am I not seeing? And number three, in meetings, enforce a personal rule to at least let three other people speak before you do. Point number five, push back professionally. Your role is not a yes person, but to be the guardian of the project's success. This means saying no or not now to requests. Pushing back professionally means doing so based on data and logics and not on emotion, so you can preserve the relationship. Why is this important? Unchecked requests lead to scope creep, burnout, and project failure. The ability to push back effectively protects the project boundaries and maintains your credibility as a leader who was focused on agreed upon objective. Experiment with these actionable tips. Explain the trade-off. That's an interesting idea to accommodate. We'll need to either extend the deadline by 3 weeks or we'll need to move feature Y. Which one would you prefer? Number two, refer to objective criteria. Look at, like, for instance, the project charter or the budget. Here's a good example. Per the charter, we all sign that functionality is out of scope for this particular phase. Now, let me park here parenthetically. I want to say the project charter is not a static document. What is a static document? Meaning that when we get into the planning phase, that we may identify there's more things that we have to do this. So I would always say that once we lock in our scope per se, that we ensure that per the scope that we signed, the scope statement, that you want to make sure everyone is aligned there. So there's no, if we have to make a change, I'm all for it, but we have to understand what that change may impact. Acknowledge the request validity. See, before explaining the constraints, I understand why that would be valuable. Unfortunately, our current resource allocation doesn't support that. Point number six, be prepared to pivot from your plan. See, the project schedule is not a sacred text. It's a hypothesis based on information you have to start with. A pivot is a structured, intentional change and strategy based on new information designed to better achieve the project's ultimate value. Why is this important? Clinging to a flawed schedule simply because the schedule is a recipe for disaster. What do you mean by there? I've seen where a lot of times when, especially my new project managers, will build these schedules and they will not pivot, even though all the data is saying pivot. There is a way to pivot ethically by putting a change request in. There's a way to pivot ethically by ensuring that you get aligned with your project team and stakeholders, but you must be willing and able to pivot to demonstrate strategic thinking and a focus on outcomes over outputs. It is the essence. It is really the essence of really having that agility mindset, even though we may be in a predictive environment. Experiment with these actionable tips. Do what we call check-ins. What is a check-in? We want to look at plan, versus really what's going on or reality. You do this with your team. You ask a posing question of, what are your thoughts of what is actually happening to what we thought would happen? Next point, foster a culture where you're raising concerns about the plan as seen as a positive and not a negative. And that's another thing I want to touch on at a very high level, is that we sometimes get so caught up, especially in a predictive space, that it looks negative if we have to make a change because we have this massive plan. No, it's not, because the information you receive has allowed you to say, hey, we have to pivot, because whether it may have been an external factor, what's an external factor? Maybe now the widget has upgraded to a software version of 2.0 and you are on 0.0 and you need to make that change for your customer. All right, number three and the last and final one, when a pivot is needed, formalize it. Document, you know where we're going with this. Document beats what? Document beats a conversation. Again, document beats what? Document beats conversation. You know I'm going to constantly push that. See, document the new data, the new plan, and the expected outcome, and get a formal buy-in, not only from your sponsor, but you also want to make sure the team is on board. Point number seven, document interactions to protect the team. This isn't about creating bureaucracy. It's about creating a factual record. Important conversations, decisions, and commitments often happen verbally. A follow-up email or entry in the decision log transfer that verbal agreement into a documented fact. This is your professional insurance policy. Why is this important? People's memories, sometimes we're human and we may forget, or what we call selective memory. So when disputes arise weeks, months later about who said what or who was unclear on this, we need to keep a record that has social proof, that is documented in a way that we're all aligned. It protects you, and most of all, it protects the team and the project from misunderstanding any political fallouts. Experiment with these actionable tips. Send a brief follow-up email after an important verbal decision. Hi, John. Just to confirm our conversation, we've agreed to proceed with option B. Let me know if I misunderstood anything. Number two, maintain a simple decision log. That's a list of decisions, the date, the owner, and the rationale. And the last and final one, get key approvals and change requests in writing. Email is sufficient, but you want to save these in a central folder. Point number eight, every meeting must have a verdict. Say what? Every meeting must have a verdict. See, sometimes people just love to meet, just to meet. They may be hiding from work. They may be hiding from another coworker, but meetings are for making decisions or resolving issues, not for sharing information that could be sent via email. Every meeting you call must end with a clear verdict, a decision made, a plan approved, or some type of actionable item that is assigned. This is important because it respects people's time and forces progress. A no verdict meeting is a failed meeting and a waste of everyone's time. I want to say this real quick, and I mean this in the most respectful way. You will earn so much more respect when you respect people's time. Because if you're like that typical project manager that's calling a meeting just to call a meeting, just to say, hey, we met, versus not having something as a verdict or something as a decision or approved made, people are going to stop showing up to your meetings. Trust me, I've lived it, I've breathed it, and it's frustrating because you're trying to figure out, why are people not showing up to my meeting? Here, experiment with these actionable tips. State the desired outcome in the invite. Don't just list an agenda. State the purpose of this meeting is to decide between option A or B for the log, for whatever that particular thing is. Number two, facilitate, don't dominate. Your job is to guide the conversation, ensures everyone is heard, and drive the group towards the stated goal. You should be the person talking the least. And the last and final one, end with the who, what, and when. Before anyone leaves, verbally summarize the action items, who is responsible for each, and due date, and send it in writing immediately after. I sometimes do 24 hours because a lot of people are not going to read that email immediately after, but it depends on what type of organization you're in, or most of important, what type of project team that you have. Well, family, I appreciate it if you stayed this long. See, leading your first project isn't about perfection, because there's no perfect project manager. It's really about presence. See, it's about making clear decisions that when no one else will, you're holding your ground when you're in doubt. See, earning respect by how you lead under pressure is not by the title or your email signature. No one hands you authority. You build it through how you communicate, how you carry yourself, and how you recover when things go off script. I close with this. Two questions for you. Are you going to keep playing it safe, or are you going to start leading like you belong in the role? And the last and final question, apply just one of these principles from today's episode this week. Test it. Observe the shift and report and let me know how it goes, because leadership grows from action, just not from awareness. I go by the name AD for all you smart and intelligent folks out there. Hey, listen, that just simply means it. Until next time.